Okay, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. We're here again in the fabulous Studio 1A in beautiful Lehigh, Utah.
Windy, Lehigh, Utah.
It is windy. Yeah, it's that time of the year. There's supposed to be 70 mile per hour winds through the state tonight.
And snow.
And this makes for boring radio.
Cold, rain, and snow.
And at my side is the one and only Zilpha Larson. Hey, Zilpha, how you doing?
Good. I probably am the only one and only Zilpha Larson.
That's true.
On the planet.
There is none other like you. And across from me is Amy. Welcome back, Amy.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well.
Well, that's good to hear.
It is. It's good to feel.
I was going to go off on a tangent, but I decided not to. And joining us for the first time is Patrick. Welcome, Patrick, to the Den of Iniquity.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. So what's your impression? You know, people asked us to take a picture, but we never have because it's always a mess in here.
Well, actually, I thought you had your studio in your basement. Kind of like took out the whole lower level and a huge sound studio. But we're actually here in a room that's filled with books. And I told John when I walked in that you can, I've heard it said that you can tell a man by his library. And if you didn't know John from his Mormon Expression podcast, you would think he's probably the most faithful member in Utah County.
Is that because you're sitting right next to the primary manuals right there?
I am looking across. I think there's every 1970 church book I've ever seen.
Well, I do. I do read some of them, but it's sort of a side hobby that I collect Mormon books. And so, the studio is sitting in the midst of our den, which is also our library. And there's about, I don't know what we're up to now, about 1,800 volumes in here.
Yeah, so, I think we kind of frightened the ward mission leader.
Yes, that's a story for another day. But the missionaries came to visit us this week, and. And then yeah, they were
stepped into a.
Oh, that would have been a priceless sight to see.
Fun. Yeah, yeah.
They were probably at first like really excited and then really confused.
They said they're going to come back to try round two. We were really nice to them. At least I was. Zilpha's a little bit meaner than I am.
I'm not mean. I'm never mean.
Prickly.
No, I wasn't prickly.
A little bit more blunt.
I was blunt. That's not mean.
I'm a bridge builder.
His bridge is like, so what does true mean? What do you mean by truth? That doesn't mean anything.
I think they said, I'd like to let you know that the church is true. And I said, well, hold on there a minute, cowboy. What does that even mean? So that I guess that's where it started out.
Well, if that's not blunt, I can't wait to hear what Zilpha said.
I just mentioned that I had a problem with the Laban story. When they were trying to convince me that I needed to believe the Book of Mormon was true, and I said, I don't think I want to believe the Book of Mormon is true.
We did actually hear. They did actually bust out milk before meat on us, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Nice.
They did. And he also brought up the scripture, those who are learned think they are wise, or something like that.
But we're probably the first people who quoted Book of Mormon scriptures back at them. So I don't think that he was used to that.
Could be.
Poor kid had only been on his mission 6 weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'll let you know how it proceeds. And if I decide to get rebaptized, you're all invited.
That'll probably be the most attended baptism that they've ever had.
Yeah, you're right. I haven't been excommunicated. So my baptism is
still good. We can
do it
in the little river right over there.
Yeah.
I still have the priesthood. So
the River Jordan, right?
Yes, the River Jordan.
Yeah. That's
the River Jordan in Utah County.
Right.
Not Israel.
Same thing. Yeah. It's a sign. Haven't you ever had that lesson in Sunday school that you know, if you flip Utah upside down, it matches the Holy Land?
No.
Are you serious?
You've never heard that before?
No, I'm not from Utah.
You got the Dead Sea.
I'm not either,
and
the Jordan
River.
And race. Showed us.
It's, you know, kind of a similar climate.
Oh, it flows into a Dead Sea, Salt Lake.
You can tell by all the olive trees.
Yeah. Man, I am almost reconverted
and dark
from that
skin
alone.
People.
Yeah. See, you just have to pay close attention. The signs are buried. there for you to all see. All right. Well, enough okay. nonsense for this to start. We are moving forward in another of our series of top tens. And tonight we're going to do two of them back to back, and because they're related. Our first one is the top 10 reasons to stay in the church. Some people think that it might be our goal to get people out of the church. Actually, Mormon Expression itself has no opinion on the truthfulness of the church, as I've been pounding into Patrick's head for the past 2 weeks. Have I not?
I testify of that truth.
That doesn't mean that individuals might not have an opinion, but I actually personally take no pleasure whatsoever in people leaving the church. I think they need to find the position that makes them happy. But for those who are honestly seeking or a little entertainment at the expense of Mormonism, or those who are looking for historical, you know, doctrinal stuff, which is what I'm interested in, then you can opt into the decision. But I feel like I don't push it down anybody's throat, but if they want to Google us and listen to the podcast, they're more than welcome to. I personally want people to find a place of happiness and peace, and if that means staying in the church, by all means, stay in the church. So to that end, let's talk about Mormon Expression's top 10 reasons to stay in the church. And then we'll follow that with the top 10 reasons to go.
Naturally.
Any thoughts before we get started at number 10? All right. Excellent. Let's go get started. Number 10, in order of precedence of the least valuable reason to stay in the church to the most valuable reason to stay in the church. Number 10, it's true.
Or mostly true.
Or kind of true.
Or has some problems.
But I can change it from within.
Sure. But I'm just saying, hey, if the church is true or has truth, that's an okay reason to stay in the church.
And I think you could, if you thought that it needed to change, but you thought that it had a lot of truth, that would be a reason to want to stay in to try to change the thing that you love.
No, wait.
Like, because you love it so much, you want it to change into what you think it should be.
I'm confused. You guys took a left turn already. If it's true, why do we need to change it? I mean, I thought the reason was to stay in because it's true.
Well, because you think enough of it is true that it's worth your time and effort.
Oh, you're talking about the part that's not true.
Well, if you have a limited understanding, let's say, and you want to stay to maybe gain more understanding.
So for example, the Book of Mormon could be true, but the brethren are doing stuff that's not true. Say, refusing the priesthood to the blacks. Then you could say, right, even though I disagree with that particular practice, I think the church is mostly true or truthy.
Well, I think we all are involved in organizations that we have problems with. And we stay with them.
Every organization we have problems with.
I mean, I live in Utah County, and I'm a Democrat. I haven't moved yet, right?
Well, a Utah County Democrat is like a conservative Republican everywhere else. I mean, saying you're a Democrat in Utah County, we really
I'm not a Utah Democrat. So I'm one of the special imported Democrats, you know, the true breed. But I still love Utah County. I think it's full of great people, full of Mormons, and you know, full of their politics. And you know, if we take that analogy to the church, there's still a lot going for me here. I mean, I don't want to jump ahead in the list, but
right.
All right. Well, I think for Mormons that's a good reason to stay. But it should be pointed out. I mean, the truth thing. It should be pointed out that a lot of things they would say are truth, like Moroni's promise, or that Joseph Smith was a prophet, really don't indicate that the Salt Lake branch of the church is the church. I mean, there's other branches of the church. The fundies all will give you Moroni's promise too.
Well, I kind of tease my Utah cohorts that it's interesting. If you take Mormonism, has been in Utah the longest, so it has the longest time to ferment into its true form. Yet a lot of members, myself included, before I moved here, you know, kind of made this a side of Utah Mormons. You know, and that's an interesting kind of a...
Now, so where did you grow up?
I'm from Alaska.
There's Mormons in Alaska?
There's actually a lot of Mormons in Alaska. We were one of the first small temples.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What are all the Mormons doing up there? Chasing the black gold?
They were probably getting
Texas tea.
Every person Alaska that lived tea. In Alaska for a while got some big tax write-off.
I don't know.
When I was a kid, I remember that.
They used to get checks. Your aunt.
Yeah.
You still get a dividend every year.
Per person, right?
Per person.
So the more kids you have, the better.
And I have six brothers. So
now, if that's not bleeding the beast, I don't know what is.
your fundies are showing. All right. All right, so it's true. Number 10.
No, wait. I want to say something about what Zilpha said and that adding good to it. I think you can maybe, you can want to stay to better something in the mostly true part of it, where you were, if you value something, there may not be 100% going on that you like, and not that you stay with it out of habit, but that you want to better it, and you feel you have something to offer it that wouldn't otherwise be offered if you left.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that should kind of be like 10 and a half.
All right. If you guys want to steady the arc, I mean, that's all right with me. Sometimes the arc needs steadying.
Yeah,
it sometimes does. It melts your face, so you got to be careful. All right. Let's move forward. Number 9. It gives structure in your life, or you need to get told what to do. Now, when I was a member, people would get up in fast meeting every other month and say, I don't know where I'd be today without the church. I might be in a gutter somewhere. And when I first left the church, I thought, oh, that's such baloney. You guys, you're better than that. But, you know, now I've come around and thinking, I'm glad the church is saving us from all these Mormons who would be rapist serial killers. Indeed, the ward mission leader over at our house this week told us that atheists have no morals. And without the church, you could just do whatever you want.
No, so, he said he would do everything that felt good physically if he wasn't a member of the church. And I'm like, you really think so?
Which included robbery. And so I am happy.
Come on, John, we've all had that secret.
I am happy to number 9 that
every time you go to the gas station, you're like, that twitchy trigger finger.
That ain't me, man. But I'm glad that the church is protecting us from all these potential rapists who would go out and cause mayhem.
But John, I think you're skipping ahead to it's helps me live a better life.
Well,
this one's slightly different. This is you feel like you just would flounder, like you don't know what to do unless someone tells you, because you're used to someone telling you what to do, where to go.
Right.
This might jump a little bit forward too, but I think a lot of us former Mormons are, you know, that kind of lost that a little bit, and we do flounder a bit. And I think that's part of what this podcast addresses a bit, to kind of gain a little bit of structure in lives when it just all falls out from underneath you.
I think ex-Mormons tend to flounder a little bit, but I'm going to blame that on the church because...
Well, that's why you stay in, right?
Well, the religion, especially fundamentalist religion, keeps people emotionally retarded. So I think when people first get out, they have no morals because they've been told all the time, you are an immoral person and you can only do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So first they're like, I don't know, where normal people go through life and say, no, I don't rob the 7-Eleven, not because it's inconvenient to do so, but because I have no desire to do so.
Well, and also if you take away the structure that the church gives people in their life, I mean, they're always doing church related things, family home evening, going to meetings, going to Young Women's, going to Boy Scouts and all that stuff. Then if you suddenly strip that away, then you're like, oh, well, that was my life. So now what is my life?
Yeah,
and it's suddenly empty.
I've said before that I spent several years working with jails all across the United States, and I've been in a lot of jails, and
not for robbery
but most of those people in there, in is as good as out, and a lot of them like being in because they like the structure. There's people in their lives who need a certain amount of structure. There's people who thrive in the Marine Corps because they need to, want to, like to be told what to do all the time. And for those type of people in an organization like the Mormon Church, they are probably going to do better than they would outside the church. And I don't mean that as an insult. There's just some people who need more structure in their life. There's some areas of my life where I need more structure. There's some areas where I need less structure. And in terms of how much to give to charity and when to go rake the neighbor's yard and all that stuff, the church is very good at telling you exactly when to do that.
Well, you're not going to rape the neighbor's yard.
Rape. Rape. What is the rape theme tonight?
You're the one that keeps bringing it up.
Silva, don't throw me under the bus, man. It was her all the way.
Well, and I'll say, just to nullify that point, Utah has a really high rate of rape, so doesn't matter. Everyone's raping.
Well, that's going to be point number 6. all right. Number 8. The hope of future rewards to avoid, or the fear of future punishment.
Now, I'm surprised that this is so low on the list. Because, come on, we are all in it because, you know, of the afterlife.
There are those who argue this is the whole, you know, grinding force behind Christianity, right? The Christian ethic is really seen as this, you postpone, but you're going to get the best rewards possible or the worst possible thing afterwards. So that's why you do it.
But Mormons don't get the worst possible. Well, even their hell is supposed to be better than Earth.
There's outer darkness. And then you get like the...
But you have to be really high up to get outer darkness.
The Ken doll genitalia. That's sort of a...
The what?
Ken doll genitalia.
The genderlessness of the angels. Genderlessness. The ministering servants.
Okay. I had never heard that until recently. So let's tell our listening
audience.
He's
really worried now. He might go back.
About what that is.
Okay. So it's actually just a... straightforward logical leap, because in Mormon theology, the only ones who will be allowed to reproduce, you'll be resurrected in bodily form with your body, which potentially means that you'll have your testicles and wee-wee, right? That's the
or the opposite.
The opposite. Go in the opposite direction, and there you have it.
And so to explain, if you're physically resurrected, but Mormons teach the only people able to reproduce are those in the highest level of celestial kingdom. Therefore, and I don't think that the Mormons like the idea that everybody's just, it's like they've, you know.
Free sex, free love.
Yeah, free sex because they can't reproduce. So game on, you know, there's no herpes in heaven. So
herpes is forever, John.
So the idea is that then people who aren't in the highest level of celestial kingdom will have their genitals removed.
I.e. the Ken doll.
Now, see, going along with that idea of the punishment, I would think that the genitals would still exist. They would just be functionless, which would be torture.
Oh, a useless reminder of your sins on
exactly.
Earth.
Exactly. That
would be awful.
That would
An unresponsive clitoris. A penis that would not erect. That is my outer darkness.
See? So you have nullified your own point. The Mormon male...
It can get worse. Okay.
All right. So, yeah. I mean, I maybe it should go up higher on the list, but that is a huge motivator in the Christian ethic.
But it also, you have to have some belief that the church is true in order for that to mean anything.
Well, you can go through the motions with some doubts. I mean, we're
fear
all at
is
that
a great
stage.
Motivator.
That's true. So you could be afraid that it's true.
Well,
I was terrified it was true.
I think there's a lot of people willing to take Pascal's wager who might not say that the Mormon church is the absolute true church, but especially if you go out on the fringes of the church, you know, outside of Salt Lake City, there's a lot of people who say, meh, it's a good church and God likes everybody who tries to worship him without even really buying into the idea that the church is the true church in comparison to other Christian religions.
Right. So they could just hope it was good enough to get into heaven.
It's
or
a matter
whatever.
Of good instead of true, you know. Well, yeah. that cleared the docket. All right, number seven, which I remember I took a class. I wish I'd saved an anthropology class when I first got my mission that dealt with this very topic, and they gave a lot of credit to this next one, which is people just like it. You enjoy it. People go to the church because they like it. This goes to the John Larson theorem, which is that there are two aspects.
For people to leave the church.
For people to leave the church, that there's the enjoyment factor, and then there's the believability. And you have to both not enjoy church and not believe it to leave the church. Mm. So both those things have to be lined up. So there's a lot of people who flat out, I've met them, they're out there, there's tons of them, flat out do not believe the church, do not believe its truth claims at all. But for whatever reason, they like going to church. And that's a good reason. If you like it, I mean, why not? It's like joining the Kiwanis. Go ahead, you know?
Well, it's that investment thing. Why would you search for anything that put those cracks in your testimony? Because you enjoy it? Why would you risk it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people just aren't interested. They, you know, when you talk about historical issues or doctrinal issues, that's not what the church is about to them. It's not about Joseph Smith. It's about their ward members and
I think it was on the Facebook VIP lounge that someone mentioned that activity rates in some stake in the Northeast that when the youth transitioned to young adulthood, they lost huge numbers into inactivity. Mm-hmm. And I completely believe the numbers. And because as a youth in the church, I had a great time. I absolutely loved the activities. I loved, well, I mean, there's girls there, there are dances. I mean, it kept me motivated because I truly enjoyed it. And the doctrine, I thought I understood it. I understood enough of it to feel confident. But yeah, 100% enjoy it. And, you know, I can look at myself in transition through my life. And probably when my testimony probably was weakest is when I wasn't enjoying church as much for whatever reason. Yeah, so John, I might be a convert to your two theorems there.
Yeah, I think it is. I think most people don't really like it. And exhibit A is go to church some Sunday and look around. Man, the you know, I think probably the church would be shrinking faster if it wasn't for the invention of the smartphone. Because Angry Birds must do a lot of business in the Mormon corridor. Because, I mean, I had down that whole rest your head on the front of the pew in front of you sort of thing, like with your two fists and your head between your...
So you don't get the line on your forehead,
yeah,
right?
So you don't get the line on your forehead.
Pew line. You know, I was just thinking that there probably is a direct correlation in the enjoyment phase. And I'm losing my train of thought here because, yes, I'm agreeing. It's gone.
Well,
you can try again because we can edit that part out. Yeah. If it comes back to you in the next 2 seconds.
I think to piggyback on what Patrick was saying is the amount that we have previously invested into our relationships, our callings, the enjoy it factor, you can consider it a sense of service, not real. You could maybe tweak it where you're not necessarily serving religiously. You just go for the sheer joy of being preparing a lesson and teaching and imparting that good, not necessarily that true message.
Well, in enjoyment, we're sort of talking about that social aspect, which we'll get into in a minute here, but enjoying it might not be all positive because I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but research has shown that when churches ordain women, the male membership of the church drops off precipitously. Men sort of biologically like to be in charge. They like to, you know, get up on stage and wear their ties and their little suits and wave their genitals about.
I love that church.
And I think there's an enjoyment factor. And one thing that I think has made the church successful, especially in 1950, 1960s, was it really pushed those buttons because people would move up in the church and they would sit on the stand and they'd get more sort of accolades and glory. And
I love that part about being a priest. You get to lead some of the firesides. I was like, I am the man. Look at me on the stand.
It starts as a 12-year-old.
I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't know how that feels in church.
I was jealous of the deacons.
I know, but
I was never jealous of the deacons. I didn't want to carry that little tray of bread.
I just like that they didn't have
to
sit with
sit
their
there?
Family.
Yes. Well,
they
way
didn't
better
have to sit with their families.
Around.
They could be in their little coven of importance. And
they had to say that prayer word for word over and over
again.
If they mess up one little word, the priest, yeah.
But that is an enjoyment factor for a lot of people. Yeah. Especially, I think that tickles
did
people's
they have
maleness
a little thing
more.
To do?
And they'll tell 12-year-old boys in deacon's quorum, especially those who don't have like a believing father in the house, you're the priesthood of the home, you know.
That's
and
true.
and that can sort of, it's just like a corporation. I mean, corporations get, if any of you have worked for a corporation, you'll see it, they worry about what chairs people sit in, how many square inches are in an office, what the desk space is. Some corporations worry about like what kind of pens people are issued and stuff like that. So I mean, that's obviously that sort of sitting in structure is in our DNA, and I think the church feeds into that, and it's one of the reasons it's been successful, in my opinion.
I think you're right.
Well, I think that speaks to the men. So I guess maybe we can put for the women on the reasons not to go section.
Oh, I already put that. I already penciled that in.
All right. Look, we've already sort of hit on number six, which is...
Why do women like it so much? I guess it's just a social thing more for women.
Like what?
And why do women, so many women... I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. Women say, like, if their husband's struggling with his faith, they say, I don't want to hear about it. It doesn't matter to me. If it's true or not, that doesn't
matter.
Men
do that, too. I mean,
I just like going.
If you take a survey around the ex-Mormon community, you'll see just as many single women in the ex-Mormon community as single men.
Right.
I think it happens.
No, but if
I'm
men
saying,
go for the power, right.
what
do women
what is
go
it
for?
That the women
well, let's
are...
talk about number six. Which is,
hey, that's society. Really, that's dumbing it down though.
Well, I think
dumbing it down.
No,
women only go for social, friends, community, and neighborhood.
I didn't say only, because there's some women who are motivated by
all these other reasons,
by the same things that men are. And there's some men who are motivated by the society. I'm not saying one way or the other, but I think number six is the sociality.
I think it does tend to be more important.
Well, if you go to those traditional gender roles that I think most Mormons want to believe in, the women are supposed to stay home. They're going to be at home with their kids. They're going to be estranged from that business atmosphere that the men make friends at work. What do the women get?
The women are starving for adult contact.
But let's talk about that a little bit, because there are women who want to stay home with the kids and who enjoy that sort of traditional domestic role. There are men who enjoy that too. But there are fewer men than women.
Not very many women enjoy it either.
There are women who enjoy it.
Don't break those lies to me. I've already had enough truths ripped away from me.
No, there are women who enjoy it. And I think there's sort of a quasi-modern thing to assume that nobody does. But if you do enjoy that sort of stuff, you enjoy... I mean, look at my mother. I mean, she digs on all that stuff, on the sewing.
But that's
because
that's how she was trained up.
Well, I think that
that is her worth. Everything is tied up in motherhood to her. Her worth.
There are people who enjoy it, and
my sister's one of them. Her twins turned 1 year old today, and she sews all of their clothes. She sews all of their blankets. She sews their bed sheets. She sews the fitted sheets. She has an Etsy shop, and she loves it. She loves it. She loves it. She waited 8 years for these babies, and she would sacrifice anything.
Wait till they're 3 and 4.
So for those,
she's got gates up around everything.
Don't listen to cynical
Zippa. Planning
for those people. The church is a huge support for them, because they like it and it validates that lifestyle. There are plenty of women who want to stay home and want to do those traditional things. And in a conservative church like the Mormonism, that validates that. So.
You know, and I did some active duty time in the Navy, and being LDS, you had some social habits that aren't norm, like you don't drink. And in the Navy, that really set me apart. And what I really held on to was the wards and branches I was in. You know, I needed those friendships, because those people were like me. And, you know, it kept me in the church. It goes back to that. I enjoyed it because I had that social life, those friends that were like me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you could put the culture.
Common values.
So number six, which I think that leads into this. We've sort of talked about this, is a society. Friendship, community, neighborhood. And I think if you look across the globe, most people never leave their native religion or their native culture. It gets ingrained, and it's something that sort of set in our DNA, takes it on very early in our youth, and we like those things for the rest of our lives. And I think for a lot of people, they become culturally identified with that community. And we see that struggle even in the ex-Mormon world. There's those who are on sort of the middle way, who really... they might not believe the church anymore, but they really want to recreate that. You know, there's groups, and I don't mean this as a criticism, if that's what they, there's groups who are sort of out of the church, but still have prayers and songs, and they sing hymns. And, so because that sense of neighborhood, that sense of community, and it's hard, you know, if you live in Utah, where the neighborhood, everybody's a member of the church. I mean, you took our son to the ward, Halloween thing, because that's
his friend was going.
That community is so strong, and I mean, that's a good reason to stay in church.
When I first moved here, I had a guy I was talking to, and I didn't think he was LDS. I was talking to him, he was drinking a beer, and then later on, he mentioned something about taking his kids to primary, and I'm like, "What? Are you Mormon?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Oh, I converted last year. I just felt that my kids would suffer if they weren't Mormon, so we got baptized." I was like, I didn't know there were those kind of Mormons. So
yeah,
that
yeah.
is a big thing. I mean, here in Utah, you do think about your kids and their socialization and guff that they might get, or not even guff, but just they're not in the inn. They're not in the big group mm-hmm. that the other kids are.
Can I take a little bit different direction? I think one thing that the LDS people are creating is a self of identity, similar to, like, you know, the Jewish people. Even though you're not maybe the religion, you're also a people, you're also a religion. And that's what I think the Mormons are becoming, especially in Utah. And I don't have both of my parents are converts, so I don't have any pioneer
heritage. Can I disagree with you 110%?
No.
Because no Jew would ever talk about somebody not being a Jew anymore. And until right. as long as right, Mormons right. practice,
agreed.
They want to own those trappings of like anti-Semitism, but they themselves are willing to cast people out.
What I meant was that they can tie into a common heritage, a culture that goes back thousands of years, and you know people who have any pioneer stuff, they can go back, you know, 150 years to handcart companies, you know, the faith of their ancestors, you know, their ancestors who built temples, sacrificing. I think. I don't have anything, but I wish I did. That's something that of real value that those people sacrifice for. And I think if I had that heritage, I would truly value it.
Oh, no, I think that the heritage is an important thing. And I know when I first got married to Zilpha, his parents are converts. For my mother, she was, and her sisters and some of her, you know, my cousins and my grandparents were all daughters of Utah pioneer people. And I would tweak my mom and say, you guys will not let Zilpha join your organization. Which is true then. They've changed it since because the organization started hemorrhaging. So now they've changed it.
So yeah, because she wasn't a
because
member?
My parents were converts.
To be gotcha. A member gotcha. Of the Daughters of Utah Pioneers, you had to have somebody who came to Utah between the years of 1847 and 1869 when the railroad came out or something. Gotcha. It was some stupid rule like that. So you're right, but then there's this protective identity, and that's what it's sort of bigoted. That's why it gets me angry. Even inside the church, you know, the members inside Utah are still drawing those lines saying, well, you're not as Mormon as we are.
It's you like know. Old money, new money.
But I do think there is something to the thing of Mormons as a people. And I think it was really when they were in Utah kind of by themselves and it was like their little nest. And they really formed a really strong.
Are you using past tense?
Identity,
because the Quorum of the Twelve is still lily white, and you know the church has been in South America and in other places for a long, long, long time, and it is extremely underrepresented.
The Utah leadership. Mormon identity.
Yeah,
no, I think it extends beyond Utah.
So, what I'm saying is this is keeps people in the church. It's our number six. But it does have a downside, and that's that protectionist. We are Mormons. This is our culture, and we're going to cling to that. But that's why there's always been this rift since the early days between the Gentiles and the Mormons in Zion.
Well, but if we're talking reasons to stay, I think it's a great reason. It's like, I'm part of this group.
Exactly.
I'm sticking with my group.
People. Absolutely.
You know, my peeps, straight up.
Because, yeah, and every ex-Mormon could tell you this, there are social ramifications to leaving the church in the workplace, in the community, in the PTA. Just everything, you know.
Don't jump ahead,
we're
John.
We're getting to that.
Oh, is that on the list? I'm sorry.
Not the PTA, too.
All right. Let's get to the top five. All right, here we go. Number five. It helps me live a better life.
That's what you were saying before with the ward mission leader saying that he would do whatever physical thing felt good if he left the church.
I think that was really the sort of downside, the evil twin of this one. They're a little bit different in my mind because most people can say, hey, this makes me a little bit better versus I would be awful without this, you know. And I think there's a lot of people in the church who say things like, I hear this, which is probably true. You know, the law of tithing makes me be more generous than I would be without it. You know, that's different than saying I would go rob Wells Fargo if I wasn't a member of the church.
Well, right. We can take it down a little bit. I don't think I'd ever help someone else move. You know, just because I wanted to.
Are you serious?
It sucks. You're lugging heavy furniture.
I can tell you that when we moved, there was tons of ex-Mormons there helping us out. That people are good inside and outside the church.
No, I believe you. But, you know, this idea that it makes me a better person. I went on Saturdays. I help people move, even though I hate moving. It makes me be a better person because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Does that make you a better person if you don't want to do it?
Yes.
I don't know if it does.
Well, it's that whole fake it till you make it thing. I think there is some truth in doing things because it's the right thing to do, whether or not you want to do it or you think that it's going to help you or whatever. I think you just do it because it's the right thing
to do. But that's sort of the higher law. What parent doesn't make their kid apologize? Right. If you think about that in the abstract, that has no moral value. Say you're sorry to your sister. And you know damn well that kid's not sorry, but you make him do it because you're teaching him that value that so I think there's some value in society of saying, here's the right things to do and you need to do them.
Do it even if you don't feel like it.
And then hopefully you eventually learn the higher law, which is you should be sorry because, you know, that's the right thing to be.
Them.
Or you should help people. But I do think the church tends to exaggerate this. I think there's a lot of people give credit to the church of being a better person when they'd be a better person anyway.
I think in some ways I felt that when I left the church, and sometimes I still feel like I need a kick in the pants sometimes to, you know, it's easy to be kind of selfish and caught up in your own stuff. And when I was a faithful member, I was much more likely to just sacrifice my comforts and my needs and wants to help other people. And I think there's a happy middle ground where, you know, you're not always sacrificing what you need and want for the sake of other people, but that you're not always selfish.
Well, maybe it makes up a little bit during those formative years. Cause let's face it, not all parents are good parents or good people at that. And if you have that social background of a church, the Mormon church in this case we're talking about, it makes up for maybe some of your parenting mistakes. You know, they remedy the stuff you're doing wrong.
Could be.
That's number four.
I really think... Yeah, we're on number four.
No, we're not.
Well, but it helps me live a better life,
okay.
A better person.
All right, so
but, you know, later on, you take those formative years and you put them into practice as an adult.
Here's where I really like the church, and this is where it separates itself from other churches, is it does oftentimes force people to grow. Because in a lot of other churches, they have a junior Sunday school, just like the Mormon church does, but they usually ask for volunteers. So people who gravitate towards that do it. There, all of us have been put in callings that forced us to learn a new skill set or kind of got us out of our comfort zone. And what I really miss is life does not generally afford you those opportunities to do things you normally wouldn't do. So sometimes I think the church helps people develop themselves in a lot of ways because people are sort of forced to be better or to do things they wouldn't normally do. And I think that's a real positive in the members' lives.
Well, I noticed as a teenager that for some reason, we had like only four or five LDS students in our high school, and it seemed like the LDS students were a little better at or less nervous about getting up in front of the class because they had done it. And there are only so many opportunities in school to do that. And when you have so many, like you were saying, opportunities to get out of your comfort zone and get up in front of a group of people. And they do that to the kids all the time in the LDS church.
Okay. That leads us into number four, which we've already brought up too, which is it's a good place to raise children. I think this is probably not especially true. In my opinion, it's only true with people who have really poor parenting skills. Don't get me wrong. That's a lot of people. and so people who don't have that, it gives their kids some sense of structure they may not get at home. But I do think there's a lot of credit that's given to the church here erroneously. But I do think that's probably a good reason. I know I miss having those more structured things for our children. You know, we have to really seek them out, where if you're in the church, it just sort of blah, it's there. You know, you can drop your kids in the primary.
I don't know. I try to, my stereotypes of how everyone else raises their kids outside the church was that all their kids, when they hit middle school and high school, are just having sex and doing drugs. You know, school ends, they go home, get it on, shoot some drugs, right? That's what they do. Right. No, that's a stereotype. And now, I don't know. I mean,
I can tell you my 13-year-old comes home and sings Glee karaoke.
Oh, almost
very
as
sinful.
Bad.
Very,
almost as bad,
very
right?
Bad.
Well, I mean, there's studies that show that, like, you know, children of atheistic parents, or I think that children whose parents are very open about sex tend to delay their first sexual experience. Yeah. And those stereotypes are overblown inside and out. I mean, I've met plenty of people who were getting it on while passing the sacrament. I mean, so it's like there's some kids who are sexually inclined. There's other kids who aren't to that maturity level yet. And I don't really know how much the church has bearing on that. It's hard to say.
I think there's an assumption that you're raising good kids because you are in a church. Therefore, the church is good for raising kids.
But actually, you know, when I mentioned the LDS kids seeming like they were kind of better at presentations, it wasn't just the LDS kids. It was also the children of professors and professionals like dentists and doctors. So it's not just there's an socioeconomic component to that as well.
I mean, look at the top schools, right? The top 50 schools in the United States. You know, so these are kids who obviously weren't all smoking pot and just involved in wild orgies. They had to have their stuff together enough to get into the schools. And are LDS children overrepresented or underrepresented? My guess, it probably matches the population. So, I mean, that would show that, like Zilf is hinting at, it's not like an LDS thing, but a parenting skill set or a class thing, you know.
So, John, am I getting out of you that you think this it's a good place to raise children? It's kind of a meh point.
I think it's good for some. I'll give you an example. I mean, I've had a lot of frank discussions with a lot of people who left the church, and I am amazed at the number of kids. I won't call it molestation, but because I think if a 12-year-old is sort of fiddling with an 11-year-old, that doesn't really rise to the level of molestation. I would dare say, I'll put out here right now, that one in every three Boy Scouts in the church was messed with sexually in the Boy Scouts. And I think there's this...
By other Boy Scouts.
I think there's this naivety.
Sexually, you're saying?
They were introduced to sex. Yeah.
I was in the wrong troop.
it happens all the time. You know, like circle jerks and things like that are going on constantly in every ward. And I'm putting out there now, one in three boys is introduced to sex.
Let it be on the record.
Yeah. So, but what I'm saying is all these people are extremely naive about that. I mean, I saw in the Boy Scouts this stuff going on under the nose of the leaders.
If you could see me, I have this huge question mark, exclamation point above my head, because those figures seem crazy.
I'm talking the boys who go to the Boy Scouts under the auspice of the church who are introduced to sex. So they go on to a camp and they have a copy of Penthouse there. Or they're in the tent with the boys and some kid whips it out and starts jerking at it. I mean, that stuff happens constantly in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, I was in the wrong troop.
Well, I don't think that would be... I don't think the church would be the only Boy Scout troops that would have that. Wouldn't it be all Boy Scout
troops? No, but what
troops?
I'm saying is I'm pointing to the – I don't know. I've only really have experience and talked to people who have been in, you know, this Boy Scout troops.
I don't know the numbers, so I can't argue facts. But I'm going to say that my experience – and I was going to kind of go to this, that the quote that it takes a village to raise a child. And that has been my complete experience raising my children in the church, that my kids are so socially adjusted because of all the adults, you know, helping us raise them, you know, giving their input, that my Boy Scout experience, I had some great leadership that, you know, men I really looked up to that taught me some
great things. Okay, well, let me challenge you, because the first time I went on a scout thing, I was 11, and the boys went over the ridge, and these two older scouts whipped it out and started going at it in front of the other boys.
Are you serious?
My parents, to this day, don't know about that. They would say exactly what you said. I was mortified, and I had no idea what the hell was going on. I had never seen or heard of masturbation. I didn't know what was happening. So you're sitting here in this chair, and you could be sitting next to my mom, and you guys would both be agreeing that the Boy Scouts, and that's to my point.
I'm saying my experience. And
So what I'm saying is that this number four is... I think people invest a lot in saying, hey, the church is a great place to raise kids. But I have heard from ex-Mormons all sorts of funky stories of what things that were going on in Mutual and whatnot. People smoking dope and people getting basically molested by older kids and this sort of thing.
I would testify yes to that. My Mutual night was a sexual exploration night. No intercoursing. But there was a lot.
Zilpa, was this your experience?
No, but my parents strangely would leave us alone for hours with other kids, not thinking that we would mess around.
But Zilpha was felt up by a missionary when she was 14.
Shh.
So then it's the same thing. It's the assumption of...
Well, yeah. I mean, who's going to think a missionary is going to mess with your 14-year-old? Well,
I always wanted to mess around with a missionary.
Even worse.
I was on my mission when missions couldn't hold touch kids anymore, you know.
Really?
Yeah. That was,
and I guarantee that must have been in your mission. That came from some reason.
No, it was church-wide.
What?
Yeah,
they couldn't hold kids?
Yeah, I was my mission 96 to 98.
Holy cow.
And I felt, I never did anything wrong like that, but it made me feel dirty that there are some missionaries doing
things. Right. And then you would feel dirty, you know.
What if a kid came up and hugged you?
Yeah, and then you'd be like, oh, sexual. Yeah,
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this stuff goes on. I'm just saying parents need to be aware that there's going to be other kids who might mess with them. And psychologically speaking,
so it's not the church, but in a sense, the church gives parents a false sense of security about just dropping their kids off.
So I think that's a good critique, a false sense of security. But the reality is those kind of things happen everywhere.
All
sports teams, any kind of group that has kids.
And the child psychologists who deal with sex will say kids experimenting is not necessarily a bad thing.
Psychologically, it probably won't mess you up.
It really has to do with how parents contextualize it. If parents walk in and there's the 8-year-olds have their pants down and
which happened to me, and we were spanked on our bare bums.
And if parents wig
your
out,
pants are already down, makes it easy.
No, it was later. We had to take them down again to get spanked.
Then kids are likely to then think, "Oh, I'm dirty." It depends on how they're taught. If parents like, don't do that. It's sort of all context. So that's why kids can go through the same experience and some will look back and say it was positive. It was fun, to play doctor. And other kids will think they're extremely dirty for it. But I mean, we're kind of off track.
We're way off track.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to summarize.
It's a good place to raise children.
It can be.
It can be.
It could be.
Takes a village.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You said you're a Democrat. I remember when the Republicans flipped their wig when... Hillary Clinton said that takes a village.
Why would they flip their... Anyway.
Communism. All right.
Okay.
Number three, I think is a real... Now we're in the top three. Number three is one that I have run into personally with people I've met, which is your job or career will suffer for it. There are tons and tons of doctors, dentists, lawyers, and BYU professors in the state of Utah who think Mormonism is a big crock of crap, but know they can't leave because their practice will completely fall off if they do
so. Or they're afraid that it will.
And there can be real, real financial ramifications for leaving the church in the career path. So I'm saying that's a good reason to stay going to the church. If you're a dentist and you've built up a practice, you might want to just keep going so that you don't lose your practice.
Even if that's your only reason?
You get your tithing 10% back, right? If you,
I suppose, but it's a really good reason. I mean, you can literally lose everything financially leaving the church.
Well, but this isn't an easy solution, but you could get up and leave Utah if you really wanted to leave the church and restart a practice, but that would be difficult.
If you've been working for the church for 18 years, you lose your pension, so just walking away from all that is hardcore.
If you work for the church, you're in serious trouble.
Well, there's a lot of people in Utah that work for the church, 10,000 people there work for the church.
Yeah, not all of them have testimonies. It's statistically impossible.
Right.
That's quite the phrase, impossible, but I'll go with it.
I know church employees.
So we know it's that it's impossible.
I know that when I went to a job interview maybe a year ago, it was right after I got laid off. This is not necessarily that my career is going to suffer if I don't, because before that I worked for Planned Parenthood and, didn't suffer at all. But I remember going into an interview and I could quickly tell by the way that the man was interviewing me that it was really important to him to know that I was a member of the church. And certainly I'm not going to lie and say that I am, but I found myself talking up all of my family members that were and just trying to drop little hints that I was still connected. I was still connected to the church. I'm not going to come right out and tell you I'm not a member. I'm not going to lie and say that I am, but
most ex-Mormons in the state of Utah learn to play the nuanced game of not answering the question.
Well, they can even hurt you in your just regular job. If you're just a regular Joe Schmo and people find out you're an ex-Mormon.
It happened to me. Yeah, it's happened to lots of people.
You'll get gossiped about. You'll be passed up for promotions.
Well, you and I have heard stories from people who've lost, you know, after finding out they suddenly get laid off or they lose responsibility or they're transferred. It happens all the time, you know. It's a real the cost of leaving the church is not all fun and games. There are real costs.
If you're a BYU student or a student at another church school, that's a serious place to be in. I'm having doubts.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this really, all three of our top three have to do with that social cost. You look like you have something on your mind.
No. I'm just saying it's a sad statement. That sort of bias probably exists in a lot of communities. And I think the LDS community has to fess up and realize that, yeah, we are guilty of it too.
And I think two is important. I mean, I'm not naive. This happens all over the place. You can go to Catholic communities and Baptist communities and stuff like that where it'll be the same thing. There's probably, I'm sure it happens in reverse, that people get discriminated against because of their belief. Now, this is sort of one of my touchpins because I believe in the First Amendment that people shouldn't be discriminated against on basis of religion, but we have in federal law that we exempt religions from that requirement. So I think if those bastards want that rule, then they have to obey it themselves. So I think until that thing, we should be fully available to discriminate.
You know, I don't think this excuses the behavior, but I think many apologists, myself, would say that sort of bias, that sort of discrimination, kind of goes back a long time in Utah history. You know, it's not too long ago when the Mormons were preparing for invasion by U.S. armies. It was us against them. That behavior and that sticks deep into a culture, and you know, you're 100 years, 150 years down the road, and still a little bit of us against them, especially outside of Salt Lake County. I mean, it's very Mormon dense anywhere else. So.
We'll have to investigate in a future podcast. What did you say? The Mormons preparing for an invasion?
Yeah.
Weren't the Mormons preparing for a secession?
Well, the army was coming in, weren't they?
The army was coming either way. That's true.
Fort Douglas put their cannons right above Salt Lake City, said,
all right.
You know, we own you.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number two. Family would reject me or treat me different if I left. The family cost, and we're talking about extended family here, can be enormous. And for those of us who've even been out of the church a long time, you're going to keep paying. It's the gift that keeps on giving and giving and giving and giving.
Yeah, my family, most of my brothers aren't active, and I have one active brother, and my parents are converts and still very active. And during my initial phase where, you know, my walls were crumbling down, I was going to play the game. I was going to go through life, you know, pretending and going to church and going through all the motions because it's so important to me not to break my parents' heart. And the only reason I came out was because my wife approached my parents and told them all my dirty secrets, all my doubts, you know. And I was like, well, why screw it then. I'm not pretending. I'm done then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so to avoid that cost, especially for younger people who are highly dependent upon their families, you know, that's a good reason to stay in the church. Because there's no way around the fact that people say, why do the people leave the church? They can't leave it alone. This is the number one reason. Because you cannot escape those family get-togethers and whatever else, you know.
I have an example. My mom made it a priority to come to visit all of her children when they turned 30. And she announced that. She said, no matter where in the world my kids are when they turn 30, I'm going to go visit them. So she went and visited my brother in Georgia and my sister in California. And then I was the next one to turn 30, and she didn't even call me. I was an hour away. And she said later that it was because she was mad at me, because she felt like I had, I wanted to leave the church. Like, I was doing it to hurt her, and she felt like she needed to punish me for that.
Yeah, so if you don't want to deal with shit like that, you stay in the church. Because it's going to keep, it's like I said, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And you can't ever get away from it, you know.
Yeah, and now she's talking about not going on a mission so that she can visit my little sister who's turning 30 this year. So, I mean, it keeps reminding me of that pain.
Well, I think if you're good for our top 10 list, 10 through 3, if you can make it and still be somewhat satisfied, to me, I'd almost, with my in-laws, my wife still goes to church, and they're very faithful, and the awkwardness between them, that wall, you know, we go back to enjoy it. I've always found sacrament meeting kind of boring personally, but I don't mind Sunday school or elders quorum. You know, it'd almost be worth it to go to church, just keep going through the motions, because, you know, I like my extended family, but it's so awkward now to have that fake barrier. I mean, I'm still the same person. It's almost worth it for number two to stay in the church for that reason.
That's why it's number two. If people say to me, hey, I still go to church for my family, I say, I dig it, brother. I mean, it's a good reason to stay in the church. If for individually, it might not be good enough, but these all 10 of these things are decent reasons to stay in the church, you know. So, all right, number one is sort of related to number two, but we need to call it out, which is your marriage would be at risk and
it's more severe.
And you know, Zilpha and I mentioned this the wreckage of the hardest thing in dealing with the ex-Mormon and liberal Mormon communities, the wreckage of marriages, just the people willing just to walk away from years of marriage at the drop of a hat because of faith issues. To me, somebody who doesn't believe in the boogeyman at all, it's so absurd to throw away a marriage based on what people believe about things that we can't even verify. But it is very serious. And the cost of divorce, the cost of broken marriages is huge. And to me, it's the best reason to stay in the church is to preserve your marriage.
And your family. I think to know that your children would, especially if you've got older children, would never let you see your grandchildren or, you know, grandma becomes an apostate.
Right. It's tough. It's a hard, hard issue. And for a lot of people, it takes a special set of people who can stay married when one apostatizes.
Definitely.
And God bless those people. We should all give them a big kiss every time we see them, because it is extremely hard to do on both sides. I'm not trying to lay this all at the feet of the believers or the people who leave or whatever. It is just a damned hard thing to do.
You know, John, that's exactly my position. And, you know, my wife and I, we've been through that the lowest of the lowest and stuff. And I want to maybe give a shout out to anyone else who's in this position that seriously, it's going to be hard. It's going to suck for a long time. But I can say that my marriage is stronger now because we work through that hard stuff together. My wife, she realizes I'm still the same person that she loves and cares about. And I understand her positions. And I've gotten to the point where I'm over being angry. And I got to the point where I realized I love my wife. And if it's important to her, it should be important to me. And so we're better for it. So, you know, stick with it and work through it. It's worth it.
Hopefully.
I mean, yeah, hopefully the TBM is hearing this. It's not necessary.
Well, and I think you guys probably, just the way you talk, it's about a lot of compromise on both sides.
Absolutely. But it's not just TBM. I mean, at some point I said, you know, I can't stay with my wife. You know, she's going to be so hard-headed, fundamentalist, you know, going to church. I can't stand that she's in one pay tithing. I mean, I was an idiot. I admit it. And so I had to give a lot of change. So it's not just the TBM. It's the, you know, everyone is out there is doing this hard part in their life that stay with your spouse. That you were there with them when it was important. Stay with them.
What I've seen on both sides, I've seen where one leaves the church and then the other takes a hard right and becomes, you know, because the church sort of encourages that, saying, well, if you behave yourself, if you're extra faithful, then maybe you can bring your family members back. And I've seen ex-Mormons take a hard left. You know, if you're still in a marriage, I can understand that you decide that the church isn't true. I'm fully with you on that. But you don't have to drink coffee, and you don't have to drink liquor, and you don't have to do things that are going to upset your spouse. I mean, those things are options, and there's plenty of people who live full lives without that stuff. So what I'm saying is, is if you want to preserve that marriage, if that marriage is worth preserving, then sometimes you have to make compromises. And you know, if for I mean, right now, if Zilpha went back to church and said, "You got to come to church once a month or whatever," I'd go. If she said you got to go every week and have to be in the elders' quorum, I wouldn't be able to do that. But you know, there are compromises you always have to make in every marriage. You have to do things that you're bored with. Get yourself a smartphone, play some Angry Birds, keep the liquor hidden away, and you know, and if your marriage is worth preserving, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I found that through wherever in the ex-Mormon world that I can't believe how many people are sitting in the pews, the guy sitting right next to you, that have their same doubts that you were having. You know, open up a little bit. And, you know, if you guys have to sit in the back row, you know, and snicker together, totally worth it. Might even be more enjoyable.
Right.
But, I mean, there's people out there who are in your shoes.
Put on your Mormon Expression bumper sticker right there on your scriptures, and you'll have somebody else come up and say, "Hey, brother." No, I mean, I don't mean to be flipped out of this, because seriously, there are a lot of marriages that just can't survive this. And for those, it's better for both of you if you walk away. But I mean, everyone...
Walk away? Oh, you
walk
mean
away
if,
from the marriage.
If there's no way the marriage is going to survive this.
Right. If you're both going to be miserable, like he wants to be married to a Molly Mormon and, you know, she wants to go experience the world, or she just doesn't believe Mormonism and doesn't, you know... Sometimes they have to part ways. But.
Well, the difference, though, is it's not just a simple, we're not going to get along if you're going to church or you're leaving the church, especially for women. If your spouse is now a non-believer, the church is going to very much encourage you through teachings to find a husband that's got the priesthood and all that other kind of thing and take you to the eternities and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's not just a matter of we disagree on this. I mean... The value of the marriage, as far as the church is concerned, is no longer valuable if one leaves.
That's yes. True.
Yeah, and I will wag my finger at the church a little bit on this one, that they could do a lot better in terms of social services and support for people who have part-believing members. Because you pick up the Ensign, and there's an article every year that talks about if you're really faithful, then all your spouse will come in. And the church needs to get better at just sort of accepting the reality of the situation and not always trying to convert them.
Well, the culture might be changing a bit because now bishops aren't counseled to encourage divorce. You know, they're encouraged.
Thank heaven.
Yeah.
They're told not to do that, but I know for firsthand experience, some still do it.
Some still do a lot of crazy stuff. But I'm saying the culture is changing.
You're right. And to that point, they used to. They used to tell them to get a divorce. So, but you're right.
It doesn't even have to come with a direction. It's the lessons.
Yeah.
It's the values. It's the culture.
Emphasis on the eternal marriage. And women, I mean, you go through the temple, you know that you need a man to get
right
through the veil.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to blame the church so much as, which I already just did. But what I'm saying is that there's a lot of people who just won't be happy. The life that they wanted... When one person leaves the church, that person is the one who changed. They changed the deal. And when you're in a Mormon marriage, there is a deal. There is a contract. There are roles.
Absolutely.
And one person changed that, and that is grounds for divorce in my mind. So if that can't be worked out, even if you still love each other, and she's just going to be miserable the rest of her life because he is no longer the faithful priesthood person she married.
Or vice versa.
It might be best for them to get divorced. But... If you can keep going to church and you can stomach it and stay in the church for the sake of your marriage, I'm saying that's the number one valid reason to stay in the church.
Amen, brother.
All right. We are going to take a small break, which you won't hear, and then we'll come back with the top 10 reasons to leave. Oh, I can barely wait.